gonna be just like senior year, except for funner.
Hey guys, I'm Kendra.
Hi, I'm Mercedes, and this week we're talking about a Nancy Meyers must-watch, Something's Gotta Give.
Yes, absolutely, Mercedes, but of course, we have to kick it off with our celebrity crush of the week. Who are you crushing on this week?
Oh my goodness, Kendra. My crush is Niall Horan. The 12-year anniversary of the making of One Direction happened this past week, and X Factor UK released unseen footage of them building the band because they were like an X Factor birthed boy band. And there's been a lot of discourse this summer, oddly, about like who was the original, like supposed to be the leader of the group. And it turns out the first person they picked was Niall. And
really?
That just like makes my heart. Yeah, it's like surprising, but also just makes so much sense because he's so charming and he's so talented. I love his music. So that just made me happy. So I wanted to just shout him out. Yes, he's Irish, which you love.
Like, that's why he's so talented. He's because he's Irish. It's not Irish blood in him. He's my favorite One Directioner. Well, him and Liam. But more now, because he does like impressions. I don't know if you saw him on Jimmy Fallon doing the different accents.
Yes, he's so good at that.
Funny. He's so good at that. Exactly.
I love him.
Okay, so I saw Nope last weekend. Jordan Peele's new film.
Yes.
My friend took me. It was very nice of him. It didn't make any sense, but what did make sense was literally how fast my heart was pounding when I saw Brandon Perea in it. Like,
oh my God, he's so beautiful.
He's so cute. He plays Angel, who like works at Fry's Electronics, and he's just so cute and adorable. I felt like the entire movie, I just wanted to hold him. And I just like, I feel like I would go see it again for him because he's that cute.
Wow.
I know.
That's big since you said it doesn't make any sense.
I know. Mercedes, have you seen it?
No. I have to like build myself up to see a Jordan Peele movie because I'm so afraid of like, I'm like not good with like suspense or like any type of scary movie. So I really have to like boost my energy.
You'll be fine. Trust you. Not to spoil, but you will be fine.
Good to know.
Guys, we're going to move over to TLDR. We just like to recap the movie for anyone who hasn't seen it. Warning, there are spoilers ahead. If you have not seen Something's Gotta Give, you can watch this movie on Netflix. Take it away, Mercedes.
Yes. Harry Sanborn, played by Jack Nicholson, is a wealthy 63-year-old New York businessman who's famous for only dating women under 30, including his current fling, Maren Klein, played by Amanda Peet. When the two head to her mother's Hamptons beach house for a weekend away, they're unexpectedly met with her mother, the neurotic playwright Erica Berry, played by Diane Keaton, and Erica's sister Zoe, played by Frances McDormand. The four decide to awkwardly share the house for the weekend, but things turn for the worst when Harry has a heart attack while hooking up with Maren. At the hospital, they meet the beautiful Dr. Julian Mercer, played by Keanu Reeves, who takes a liking to Erica immediately. Harry is instructed to stay at the Hamptons house for a few days until he's cleared to go back to the city. Harry and Erica both reluctantly agree to the arrangement. Harry and Maren end their fling, and Erica goes on a date with Dr. Julian. And at the same time, Harry and Erica's mutual annoyance for each other quickly evolves into something more as the two spend more time together until they even have sex. It's great. Harry immediately warns Erica that he is not a monogamous guy, and she tries to not let herself get too carried away by their connection. Until all of Erica's feelings for him come to the surface when she sees Harry on a date. Heartbroken, she leaves and writes a play about their whole situation. Harry is upset when he learns the play details the events of their time together, and the two don't see each other for 6 months. By now, Erica is dating Julian, and Harry finds them in Paris for her birthday, where he tells her he's been on an apology tour visiting all the women he's hurt in the past. It's clear there's still love between Erica and Harry. The two confess their feelings, and Harry admits he's in love for the first time in his life. A sweet ending for two crazy people.
Love it. So this is a 2003 film written and directed by the queen of rom-coms herself, Nancy Meyers. If you're not familiar with her, one, you're crazy. Two, she's the brilliant mind behind rom-com hits like The Holiday, The Parent Trap, Father of the Bride, and It's Complicated. So I think it's really funny because I read that 20th Century Fox declined to make this film because they thought the leads were too old.
That honestly breaks my heart.
Doesn't
it? Yes, because we need love stories for everybody. And that also means different ages, you know? And it's important to see different types of people fall in love. I really loved this fact that this is the most personal project by Nancy Meyers. For a long time, she worked alongside her husband as screenwriting partners, and he often directed a lot of the films they wrote together. But the two divorced while making The Parent Trap, coincidentally.
Oh, wow.
And that was her directorial debut. Mm-hmm. And then after the success of writing and directing What Women Want in 2000, she used her experiences to form the character of Erica and tell the story about a divorced writer. And she even said the montage of Erica crying and writing at her desk was basically the representation of how she wrote this entire screenplay.
Really?
Yeah.
That is, no. My fact is not as heavy. So it's so interesting how Julian and Erica have a relationship in this, despite their age difference. But yeah. I read that back in 2005, Keanu Reeves actually dumped his then 28-year-old girlfriend for Diane Keaton, who was 59 at the time. And I was like, Keanu Reeves is a real-life Julian Murson, and I'm here for it.
He is a real man. I love that.
He is a real man. Exactly.
That's a great... Also, did you know Diane Keaton received an Oscar nomination for Best Actress for her role as Erica?
Did she really?
Yeah. Yet another example of rom-coms getting what they deserve, which is critical acclaim.
Exactly. It's so rare that we see rom-coms being nominated for an Oscar. So
yeah.
Very interesting. I did not know that. I think also, too, the Academy just really likes Diane Keaton. It's very interesting.
Who doesn't? Who doesn't? Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Me. I don't really care for Diane Keaton, personally. But that's just me. If we had to pick a Diane, I'd pick Diane Lane. I love her. But I also, too, read that the interior of Harry's house is the same as Miranda Priestley's in The Devil Wears Prada. Like, that's a nice house. You remember the inside when Halfway has to leave the book?
Of course. Who can forget it?
I know.
Wow. So imagine living in a place like that.
Ugh, I couldn't. I couldn't. I would never touch anything. I would never go anywhere. I feel uncomfortable in like super nice spaces, like super elegant and like bougie places. I just feel uncomfortable.
I'd fall down the stairs.
100%. 100%.
Oh my gosh. One last fact.
Yeah.
The original draft of this script was 250 pages. And this is already a movie over 2 hours. So,
okay.
And roughly a page in a screenplay is roughly like a minute. A little more. Mm-hmm. So 250.
That's insane. I have some thoughts about that a little later on that I'll share with you. That's kind of funny. Guys, we're going to move over to Time Capsule. Mercedes and I just like to recall where we were when we first watched this movie. And I feel like, no surprise to anyone, I watched this movie for the first time this past Sunday. And I feel like by how often I answer this question with that answer, you'd think I don't watch rom-coms. But I do. It's just that I feel like some of the more popular ones evade me, like this one. So this was my first time watching it. To be honest, I feel like this movie, and then there's like a Meg Ryan movie, and then there's a Mel Gibson movie. All three of them, I just get confused.
Oh my gosh.
I know. But anytime I hear something's about Give, I think of like, You've Got Mail, and then I think of like What Women Want, and I just get them all mixed up in my head.
Very, very different movies here.
I know.
As a You've Got Mail stan.
Yeah.
This is offensive to me.
I'm sorry. Where were you, Mercedes, when you watched this movie first?
I definitely first watched this in high school on the E! Network. I feel like the E! Network, if it wasn't a classic rom-com that I watched with my mom when I was young, it was definitely the E! Network that was sharing all these movies with me. It was definitely a Nancy Meyers movie marathon weekend, and I was just binging them all.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So this movie came out in 2003. So I was 11, about in fifth or sixth grade. And I've said this before, but fifth grade was just a total blur for me. I have no idea what I was doing then. But then I feel like in sixth grade, I've also told the story about my beloved Wesley Breitner. And so when I was doing the notes for this episode, it actually made me realize something that's very astonishing about Wesley is I feel like still to this day, at age 30, I don't think I've ever liked a single person for as long as I liked Wesley.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy to think about? I was thinking about, I liked Wesley for a full year. Like, no one else concentrated, hyper-focused on him for over a year because I liked him before he started dating that girl, Jessica. They dated for a year that I liked him even afterwards. How crazy is that? Only him. And I feel like if you don't count my 3-year crush on Nick Jonas, like, he's the only person I've liked for that long. Like, that was dedication back then. And I was it was just a straight year of loving him. And I'm impressed with myself. I really am.
I love that because that's just like a year dedicated to him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good title for a rom-com. A year dedicated to him.
I'm such a monogamous crusher. Mm-hmm. Like the boy I often talk about who is like in middle school, Kamaya, who's 2 years older than me, I still to this day probably have like a tiny crush on him from afar. Yeah. I know nothing about him, which makes it even better because then I can just make up anything and like project any personality.
You know what, Mercedes? That is why I fall for celebrities, honestly, because I'm, I don't know anything about them. They don't know me. So if they're never going to reject me, they're never going to like mistreat me, all of this stuff, because I'm like, you don't actually know me in your real life, and I don't know you, so I can make up whatever version of you I want in my head. I have so many different versions of Dylan O'Brien. It's crazy.
Oh, it's such a good question. I think, honestly, too, like, projecting these great qualities onto, like, celebrity crushes, it really speaks to us as, like, the crushers, because it's not that we're, like, coming up with these qualities out of thin air. They're probably qualities we possess in ourselves anyway that we're just projecting onto these people because we want it back. So honestly, it's like compliments to the chef, to us, for coming up with these crushes anyway.
I 100% agree. That is so true. Do you remember what you were doing?
Yes. Yeah, so this movie came out right after my 8th birthday when I was in second grade. And I don't remember a lot of this time, but I do remember that this was the year that I really fell in love with writing. And I've always been like a storyteller. Even before I could write, my mom would write down my stories for me. But this year, I remember I had an awesome teacher. Shout out to Miss Marsh. She is still like one of the sweetest women I've ever known. Aww. And she was so focused on like building our writing and like teaching us elements of writing. And this is when I learned like writing voice, like your writer's voice. And I thought it was such a cool term to be like, you have a voice while you write. Like, you're not even speaking. And I, from then on, I've always had people be like, your writing voice is so strong. And I was like, thank you, Miss Marsh. That started when I was in second grade.
Yeah, I love that. That's so funny. I actually remember a time, too, when my 7th grade teacher complimented me on my writing voice.
It's so great how
we both ended up here, but we both have strong writing voices. That's very interesting.
Yes, I mean, it just shows that we have a lot to say and we know how to say it.
Exactly. We should go halvesies on a rom-com someday.
I'm so down.
That'd be so fun. Yeah. Guys, it's time for the Rom-Com Hall of Fame. But of course, first, Mercedes, we got to roast this movie. And I just want to say, going back to what you were saying about how the first page was 250 pages. The first chapter was 250 pages, and that's like a minute per page. My roast is very technical than anything, because in a past life, I was such a film snob. Like, I went to film school. I was very critical of films. But this movie is 2 hours and 8 minutes, and a rom-com should never be longer than an hour and a half. Hour 45 tops. Like, that's including the 8 minutes of credits at the end. So it's hard. I feel like it's hard to make people continuously laugh after that. But I do think there are some genres that if you push it to that limit, like the only movies that can be incredibly long like that are dramas, because no one ever gets tired of being sad. Like, being sad, I feel like it's just like a natural state at this point. Like,
yeah.
But with comedies, when they're, you like, you'll never see like a 3 hour long comedy, because like no one can laugh for that long. I think that's so interesting, because I feel like that's almost a take on how our society is set up, right? Like, we are so much more used to being sad or being in like this realistic world than enjoying ourselves and having fun and smiling and laughing. I'm curious what you think about that.
I mean, I totally agree. And it's so interesting because I think the movie lasts longer than I want it to, but it's also missing parts that I wish we got to see. Like, I wish we got to see more of Harry's character development. We hear him tell Erica about it in Paris, but I really want to see it happening, you know? So I really wish I got to see more of that time for him instead of just like the big 6 month time jump. And like all the best moments are of them like in the home anyway, in the house. So, and then I don't know, just the back and forth after that, you're like just waiting for them to reunite again.
Yeah.
And that, I don't know, I feel like there's a little too much time taken then, when it should have been more invested in like almost the buildup of the relationship or the bonding in the house. Cause that's just like the best part, is seeing them fall in love.
Absolutely. In the house.
Yes.
What is one of your roasts?
Okay. I have a couple more, but my biggest one is older men dating women in their 20s or sometimes even younger
Preach.
It's so gross. And the sad truth in Frances McDormand's character's monologue, where she analyzes the way single older men are praised and celebrated for their like elusive playboy nature, while single older women are often pitied, ignored, and left out of the dating scene altogether. It really speaks to me when she says that women become more and more productive and therefore more and more interesting, which in turn makes them even less desirable because, as we all know, men, especially older men, are threatened and deathly afraid of productive and interesting women. And it's so frustratingly true. And I know that's like the whole character arc of Harry, but it's so annoying to see because we see it so often, especially with wealthy celebrity men dating much younger women. And it becomes this like joke, you know, like how many actors do we tease, do we like joke about, or like there's memes about like turning 25 with Leonardo DiCaprio, you know, like how he's going to break up with you then. When like these men should be embarrassed that they're doing this. And sometimes they should be in jail. Like stop dating teenagers.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like that was definitely a roast. I just like the whole plot line of this movie. An older man who only dates younger women. Like the reason men that age do that is because they're incapable of getting with women their own age. They thrive off of ignorance and immaturity because then women won't call them out for their BS. Like younger women will put up with more for longer because of their ignorance. Whereas when you're older, you're just like, I don't do that crap, dude. Like, I don't play that way. Like, keep it pushing. And so it's just like, so it's so annoying. It's so much more telling about a guy who dates younger than like a younger woman who dates older men, you know?
Oh, it's, totally.
It's like, it says so much about you. You don't even have to open your mouth. I know everything I need to know about you.
And older women who date younger men are so much more criticized for it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's and there's like a whole frustrating. There's like a whole study behind that too. Exactly.
Yeah.
I think like another roast too. The beginning of this movie is a montage of like, you know, Harry doing a voiceover about like, oh my gosh, beautiful women. This is what I like. This is what I like about them. But it's all white women. Mm-hmm. Like, there's, like, one light-skinned black girl in there. And I feel like it just further perpetuates the stereotype that only white European features are seen as beautiful. And that made me, like, very mad to see. Like, you, like, it's just annoying that during this time, in a montage like that, you would never see, like, a Hispanic girl or a dark-skinned black girl or an Asian girl. It's just white women. But, you know, the diversity is their hair color. You'll see a redheaded white woman or a blonde white woman or a brunette. Like, it's just like, no. Yeah.
No, it's frustrating to see. And that's my last roast is just how white this movie is. And I mean, it's almost expected with the Nancy Meyers movie. You know what I mean? Yeah. But like, it's so white. The walls are white. The house is white. The sweaters are white. The people are white.
Everyone is white. Okay. Another roast, Jack Nicholson's ass. I could have gone, I think, another lifetime without seeing that. I feel like I'm scarred for life now and I'm never going to get that image out of my head. And in addition to not needing to see Jack Nicholson's ass, I just feel like there's so many naked old people in this movie. And I just, like, one is more than enough. One is more than enough.
Body positivity. We love all bodies, even Jack Nicholson's.
I'm a person, though, Mercedes, I do have to say, like, a part of me is, like, very uncomfortable with nudity. I don't know. I just am. I'm such a prude. I can be such a prude sometimes. But, like, nudity.
I mean, it's such a personal thing. Yeah. You know?
Exactly. So,
and
I feel
it's
like I
jarring when it comes out of nowhere.
Exactly. Like, if I'm watching Game of Thrones, I expect it. But when I'm, like, watching a Nancy Meyers rom-com, I'm not expecting it.
Yeah.
I feel like, too, something I always talk about in rom-coms is just the idea of, like, how do you know where this person is? How do you just show up and you know the person's going to be there? So it was the same thing with, like, how does Harry just know where Erica is in freaking Paris? This is a big...
She told him.
Did she tell... Okay, I think I must have missed that part because I was like, I don't remember her saying that she's going to be at this specific restaurant.
She said that, like, when they're talking about her favorite restaurant in Paris, because a lot of their conversations are like, why Paris? Like, why do you like Paris so much? So she talks about this awesome restaurant. And then that's when she's like, oh, your birthday's in January. My birthday's in February. If we're still like, if we still know each other, then like, we should go to Paris for our birthdays. Mm-hmm. And we can eat there.
Okay.
That's how he knows. Okay.
I missed that part. Sorry. Okay. Everyone taking it back. But still going off of what you said, I agree. I really like Zoe Frances McDormand's character's monologue in there. Mm-hmm. And I feel like my favorite quote comes right after that. when she says,
"Well, it seems really obvious to me, the injustice of it. Thank God men die younger than us. It's the only break we get."
Oh, she's so real.
She's so real. And I feel like that's kind of all we get from her, too. Like, we don't get a ton from her after that.
No, not at all. I mean, she does find Keanu Reeves and at the farmer's market, which is, like, just such a blessing. I wish I could find him at a farmer's market.
I would like to find him at a farmer's market. What would you be buying at this farmer's market?
Oh, my gosh. I would get, like, every fruit and every vegetable. And he would just be like, "Oh, this one's ripe." And I'd be like, "Hello."
I would get strawberries and flowers. So I'd get...
Oh, I love that.
What's your favorite quote?
My favorite quote is...
"People need romance like that. And if somebody like me doesn't write it, where are they going to get it? Real life?"
And it's so Nancy Myers-esque. Like, I feel like she's breaking the fourth wall with this line. Because I think she's really speaking to us as the audience of like, oh, yeah, like, of course, like... We need people like you to write stories and, like, write love stories. And that's definitely, like, her little personal touch on it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, Mercedes, the age-old question. If this movie popped up on your Tinder feed, are you swiping left or are you swiping right?
I'm swiping right. I love this movie. And I find Erica's dramatic sobbing as she types up her script so hilarious and probably just my favorite scene. It's very relatable. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Nancy Myers gets the credit she deserves as an auteur filmmaker. If listeners out there don't know what auteur film theory is, it's just when a filmmaker has a very specific style and aesthetic to their film and form where, like, you watch it and you just know it's theirs. Yeah. And you always know when you're watching a Nancy Myers movie. And this particularly one feels almost the most defining of her style and aesthetic, mm-hmm. just because of, like, the beautiful set design. And I don't know, it's also so personal to her. So I think she adds a whole other layer to it there. And her films find a way to balance aspirational and comfortable warmth for me, where watching this makes me want to wear a soft white sweater and walking along the beach and have a big bay window office where I can write, you know? Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is in the set design and production design. Like, we know when we see a Nancy Myers kitchen or a Nancy Myers office and, like, a huge wall, floor-to-ceiling bookshelf. And that is also just, like, unrelatable because these characters are so wealthy and that's unattainable, where that becomes almost like the aspirational aspect of it. But it also is also like finding connections within the home, and that feels so welcoming as an audience, and you feel so safe watching it, and you get this cozy feeling while you're watching because it feels so personal watching people just contained in a home. They're like, until they go to Paris, they're not on these like extravagant trips or adventures, you know? The fantasy still exists within a place that we all are familiar with. And this movie premiered during a time in the early 2000s where almost every rom-com had a quote about being 30 or turning 30, or being almost 30. And here we see a woman in her mid-50s being desired and finding love and even caught up in a love triangle between a 36-year-old and a 63-year-old. And I just love it. This movie celebrates aging, and I think we all need to see that more often on screen. And I don't know, I think aging is a celebration. Like, we should all be blessed to be able to age. And seeing people older than, like, mid-30s finding love is very important, because we're not all going to be in our mid-30s finding love, you know?
It's so interesting, Mercedes, because I feel like for all the reasons that you really loved this movie were all the reasons that I really did not like this movie.
Aww.
Unfortunately. And I don't think we could be more opposite on the scales. The reason I'm swiping left is because one of the reasons I love a good rom-com is because I get that feeling of love in my heart. I feel like I am the main female character, or can I at least imagine myself in the shoes. And this one just seemed a little out of touch for me. By large part, like, their economic standing. They're both incredibly wealthy, older white people, just something I cannot relate to. I just didn't care to see their relationship because I just felt like they're just very out of touch with the world. Like, even though this love story took place in the home, like, it just seems so isolated because of, like, who they are as people. Them falling in love in an isolated place, like, yeah, that's the only place where you can fall in love, because in the rest of the world, like, you stand out. You stand out because you don't fit in, because you're so much different than everyone else just by your class. And I just felt like the sex scene specifically made me really uncomfortable, because it just felt like him cutting open her sweater and just how they kiss. I just felt
The sweater, kind of, it's so hot. It's cool.
I just felt like I was watching my parents or something. And that's like an image I never want to have in my head. And I just feel like I just couldn't connect or empathize with the characters. Like, that's the biggest thing, is I wanted to, like, look at Harry and, like, try to empathize with him or understand where he's coming from. I wanted to look at Erica and, like, kind of empathize where she's coming from. But I feel like I kept making up excuses for, like, why he should have done this or why she shouldn't have done this, rather than being like, oh, I can see where you're coming from. And I think that's the biggest thing when you're watching a movie, is you need to be able to have characters that you can empathize with. And again, I'm just speaking from a personal standpoint. Yeah. I didn't feel like I could empathize with them. I also thought it was just off-putting just how combative Erica was to love, to the point that I just got really annoyed by it. I was just like, dude, just look, chill. Like, if you don't want to be, you don't have to be with someone, but it's just, you're being so combative against it and so negative towards it. And I think because I'm a hopeless romantic, that just always, like, rubs me the wrong way. And it's just, like, the storyline of her dating her daughter's ex-boyfriend. Like, even if they didn't have sex, like, that's weird. I don't know. Like, that's weird. Is, like, yeah. a mother and daughter just, like, sharing a guy. I feel like Nancy Myers, as much as I love her, I feel like she has a great batting average, but I do feel like she struck out with this one. So that's just my own personal opinion. Sorry, guys.
It's okay. We all have different opinions. It's good that we're sharing them.
Yeah, I appreciate you. Thank you. Guys, we're going to move over to couples therapy. Mercedes and I just like to kind of divulge how the characters can improve in their relationships. And I think my biggest one is I feel like Harry just needs therapy. I don't know if you agree with that. Does therapy cure being a man-child? Can it help with that?
I mean, I think it definitely helps. I don't know. I think he just needed to be, like, challenged, because he's never challenged, you know? And I think therapy would challenge him to really think. But also, like, the way he started getting, like, panic attacks and severe anxiety, I think that was another element of challenge for him, even when he wasn't around Erica, who was, like, the first person to, like, deny him a constant, like, validation.
I just feel like I don't think Harry has ever had to be vulnerable in his entire life. And love cannot thrive and flourish without vulnerability. Like, to be with someone as sensitive and smart as Erica, you have to treat a person right. You have to respect them. You have to listen to them. You have to support them. And a part of me feels like he thinks he can buy her love with all the money he has. But also, to be in a relationship, your heart has to be ready for it. And you have to be ready to commit and show up and do the work. And so that's why I feel like all around Harry just needs therapy. I feel like kind of therapy is the answer for everything. It is in my life right
now. Yeah. Same.
What else do you think?
I think, like, this whole story is really a journey of being emotionally vulnerable, and it's exciting to see them evolve and grow in that way, both of them. And a special aspect of their romance is how they find common ground together through shared life experience, because they are closer in age. So Harry's never had that, or at least not in the last 40 years of dating. And I like that they butt heads and they're not afraid to challenge one another, because, like I said, I don't think he gets that a lot with his relationship with younger women. I also don't think Erica gets that with her relationship with Julian, unfortunately, too, because he's often just praising her and fawning over her. And I think that's really where the largest age difference comes. Like, when Erica and Harry are interacting, there's this back and forth that you're not going to get with somebody when you have, like, 20 years difference, because there's just not that area of comfort and area of relatability to one another. And yeah, I think Erica and Harry just need to maintain honesty and vulnerability with one another, because that's where the passion for one another exists. You know, the more honest they are with each other, the more that they'll just trust the process of falling in love.
Yeah. And I mean, I had said this before, that I just feel like Erica needs to loosen up. The reason for that is because, like, love requires letting someone in and letting them see the great parts of yourself and the not so great parts of yourself. And I think Erica could really benefit from letting her walls come down a bit, but in a discernible way, right? I would never, especially after the heartbreak I went through last year, I would never just tell someone to just dive in blindly. It's okay. It'll work out. If it doesn't work out, it's okay. Like, no, you need to have discernible walls up.
Yeah.
But I think she could benefit from letting some down. But I'm curious what you think their love languages are.
So I think Erica gives acts of service. I love when she checks his blood pressure before they have sex. I think it's just, it's such a specific moment that only they would have. Like, none of those younger women would even think to check that for him. And I think she needs physical touch and quality time. She talks a lot about just their physical closeness and, like, when they finally kiss, and she definitely was like touch starved and needed that. And Harry gives words of affirmation. I think his words really, I don't know, they last long in her head. I mean, the title of her play is like the comment that he made about her of like a woman to love type of thing.
Yeah.
And I think he needs quality time, because I think that's why he keeps his younger girlfriends at such a distance, because that quality time, like that's where he's really going to fall. And we see that when they're like contained in the house together. But with younger women, he's like one right after another. It's such a quick fling each time that it doesn't even last.
I agree. I definitely feel like Harry gives and needs quality time. He clearly enjoyed spending time with both Erica and Marin. And he didn't even sleep with Marin. And he and Erica fell in love by doing things together, like walking on the beach together and just talking, which is like very powerful. And I do feel like Erica needs words of affirmation. I mean, a part of me feels like most writers need words of affirmation, like they dedicate their lives to writing words. But she also gives quality time, which is what Harry needs. Like, she harbored on the fact, you're right, that he said, you're a woman to love, or you're a woman.
Yeah.
And she just like kind of hung on his every word. She really took his word at face value. And so I agree, words of affirmation, quality time are very prevalent in this. So I have to ask you then, Mercedes, do you think this couple lasted 5 years?
Yes, they're all in. And I love seeing them commit to one another. It's very special.
100%. I agree. They do last in 5 years. I'd be curious what would happen if they didn't. But my favorite part was time for heartthrob versus. And I just like to talk about who we'd bring home to our friends and family. And I think we have the same answer on this.
Oh, one. Yeah.
And listeners, you should have the same answer, too, because there is only one right answer to this. It is freaking Julian. I just.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Oh my God, Mercedes, please. I wish you could feel my heart right now. I love him. He's sophisticated and he's educated and successful and eloquent. And he could just whisper sweet nothings in my ear and I would just melt in his arms. Julian is a type that I just want to sit next to a warm fire with him and exchange silly childhood stories. That's all.
I love that. No, I love Julian. He's so kind and he's so hot and he's a doctor. And as someone with a lot of medical anxiety, that would really ease me. I could use him as my own WebMD.
Yes.
And he reads all her plays. And I've emphasized on different episodes how much, like, I think, like, men in rom-coms, like, reading your work is just so hot and, like, just so nice to see. Oh, I just melt every time. Yeah. And like I said, I want to find him at the farmer's market and I want him to take me to Paris and I wouldn't leave him.
Sorry, we're going to play Perry, Smooch, Ghost. We have Harry, Julian, and Leo played by Jon Favreau. Mercedes, who would you marry? Who would you smooch? And who would you ghost?
This is really hard, actually. Because obviously I'm going to marry Julian, but I don't know who I would smooch.
that's where we get to the problem. Okay. Let's think
probably. I think I would just smooch Harry, you know.
Okay.
And then I would ghost Leo because he's only here. We only see a few minutes of him.
We do. You're absolutely right. I would obviously marry Julian. We are aligned on that one. But I would smooch Leo. I just love Jon Favreau, and I feel like if Leo's anything like Jon Favreau, he'll keep me laughing the whole time. And everyone knows this. I have a hard time deciphering the character between the actor, and I just love Jon Favreau. And I would ghost Harry. So sorry, Jack Nicholson. I applaud you. Sorry. Before we wrap it up, guys, we always love to bring in a pop culture moment. And I'm sure most people know this, but Jack Nicholson retired from acting back in 2010. And I admire it. I have to say I admire it. I don't actually know because he doesn't have social media and I haven't seen it, but I just imagine he's out here living his best life. And I imagine him like hitting his 70s and was like, okay, that's enough. I'm going to live a simple life now. And I admire that. I do.
Yeah, just chilling, loving life. That sounds great.
Yeah.
So I know this is discussed a lot online, the resemblance between Leonardo DiCaprio as he's gotten older to Jack Nicholson.
Oh, really?
And you'll see a lot of side-by-sides if you Google them. Ooh. And there is a very strong similarity in their faces. And coincidentally, Leonardo DiCaprio is a lot like the character of Harry because he never dates a woman over 25. I saw like a whole like a beautiful chart of all his girlfriends and the ages. And you're like, this is so bleak. But the chart's gorgeous. Whoever designed it was amazing. Yeah. So I just thought that was funny because he really is living this character.
He is, absolutely. In this movie, I guess, okay, Harry makes a comment about always dressing for vacation. And just last month, GQ came out with an article detailing exactly how to do that, like always dressing for vacation. And they go over this movie. They go in depth about this movie and what it's about.
Oh my God.
They give examples of how to recreate Harry's outfits, put together your own. And it's really cute.
See, that just shows like the lasting effect of this movie. Like people still want to watch it.
Exactly.
And I'm glad it's on Netflix so people have like easy access to it. So it's not just a forgotten early 2000s rom-com. It's a good
exactly.
one.
Exactly. What is your other fun fact?
My last one is just an observation that I've made. And the sluttiest men in rom-coms are always named Harry.
Ooh.
Harry Burns, Ooh. One from Harry Met Sally, and this Harry. These men, they always have a new girl. And that's just a little observation I made. If anyone has other rom-com Harrys they want to send as another example, please send them my way.
I feel like we got to analyze that more in depth. But listeners, we want to hear from you first. What are your thoughts? Do you like Something's Gotta Give? Do you feel like this is one of Nancy Meyer's best rom-coms? How do you feel about the characters? Who do you relate to? Make sure to slide to our DMs at MeCute. Again, I'm Kendra. You can find me on Instagram and TikTok at Ken10Hollywood.
Yes, and I'm Mercedes. You can find me at MercedesGV11 on Twitter, IG, and TikTok. And if you're looking for new rom-coms, follow MeetCute wherever you listen to podcasts and follow MeetCute on socials everywhere. Bye, everybody.
We'll see you next week.